Talk Radio is sponsored by HP Data Center Services, Cloud Computing Services, and Workplace 360 Services. Are you ready for an instant-on world?
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjo Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjo Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is predicting big business value from big data. And our guests for today's show are Dale Potter, who's the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at the Ottawa Hospital. Good morning, Dale. How are you?
I'm good, Sanjok. How are you?
I'm just doing fine. So how's life treating you? It's rainy in Chicago. What's going on at your end?
Well, we've managed to avoid snow so far in Ottawa, which is quite unusual for this time of year, so potential for
great.
A green Christmas.
All right, great. And we also will be having John Crary, who's the CIO of the American Red Cross. He should be joining shortly. But meanwhile, we should get started. Dale, a question here is around the very this new phrase or new term, big data. A lot of people, you know, like with any other new term, are subject to interpretation and or misinterpretation of these new terms. So what you have seen is as a good, concise, yet comprehensive definition of big data.
Well, I think the definition for big data would depend on the organization itself. For a smaller organization, you know, several hundred gigabytes of data can be quite cumbersome and difficult to manage. Well, for larger institutions, you know, the extreme being companies like Google that are data-driven businesses, you know, they have a different definition of big data. But I guess the term was coined because of the larger data sets being used for analysis. So I think what that's indicative of is that people are trying to answer broader, more complex questions, and therefore require more data inputs.
Now, with that said, so you're saying it is a dependent, it's a company dependent definition. So when you look at truly the definition, now the question here is, why should it be as a paradigm defined differently? I mean, just the scale, is that what is different?
Well, the scale is one aspect of it. The other is I believe the business model. As I mentioned, I use Google. You could use other companies as examples that are very data driven. A lot of their business lines, not just the simple search function that they offer, are data driven. Amazon.com is another great example of a data driven business where they collect masses of data related to their customers to make inferences about what customers might buy. That's a very different business model than sort of a brick and mortar manufacturing type operation. There are, you know, operational data, key data sets that they need to manage their business and their supply chains, but it's a bit of a different model. So there's the scale and there's the actual business model that you're running that influence the definition for an organization of what is big data.
Okay. Now we also have John now from American Red Cross. How are you, sir? John, can you hear us? All right, I think he's still having technical difficulties. So let's continue our conversation, John, Dale. Now, with the big data, so we are generating data from all different basically sources, may it be an immense amount of social network activity or, of course, our transactional data, which was always there. What is truly, in the most cases, generating what we are calling as big data?
Well, I think there's a few factors that are driving these larger data sets in whatever scale is relevant to the organization. One is a continued reduction in storage costs. So storage has become, especially with virtualization and now cloud concepts, it's become quite a commodity. So there's less imperative for organizations to proactively manage their data.
Okay.
I mean, my laptop has more storage and memory on it than a sizable server would have had in the early 90s. So there's that vector of the reduction in the overall cost of storage. The other is the enablement of automation and other technologies that drive more data. I'll give you an example in the healthcare industry, and I'm sure John will have other examples in his business sector. But in hospital settings, we're moving into a world where it's not a nurse reading vital signs off a biomedical device like a pump or a vent or something. That's actually transmitted across the wireless network and put in a repository. Now, one effect, this is only my personal opinion, I believe we're running into a world of data pollution, if I can use that term, mm-hmm. where we're allowing these masses of data to be stored with while not challenging what value that drives. So my example about vital statistics being pulled off a pump, you could have a filter that says only store it if it's outside of a certain level of tolerances that may indicate that the patient's at risk. The propensity is to collect it every 10 seconds and store it because, you know, it seems like a small amount of data, but then it aggregates. And we have difficulty then determining what's meaningful and what's not.
So you're saying in your context, it is just the frequency at which you need to collect the data is what is causing it. So this is more a need-based thing, or was this a wish list that's coming through and that's why people want to prepare for it?
Well, it's that, but it's a little different, Sanjog, in the sense that there's two main levers, I believe, that are driving this. As I said, the commoditized storage costs, and mm-hmm. you know, enhanced technical capabilities in the storage realm. The second is the electronic storage of data that otherwise historically has not been stored electronically, which is being driven by automation. So having, you know, devices in our business or biomedical devices and other business, they could be, you know, manufacturing machinery and equipment that have the capability of connecting to a wireless network and sending relevant data across to be analyzed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that increasing phenomena across all industries is leading to this perpetuation of more data.
Interesting. Now, with what you see as you collecting it, and yes, that's a need that has been established. So this is nothing new, at least in your context. It doesn't look like something that is so earth-shattering that suddenly you started thinking about big data. Or have you been already preparing and building the foundation all along, and this is something new for the rest of the world?
Well, I would say, and I certainly don't want to imply that I'm wiser than my colleagues are out there, because I'm not. I think what we're recognizing collectively, and you know, in the CIO community, is that there is a trend and a movement towards large, cumbersome data sets being used for analysis.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question remains to be answered. Is that useful and is it bringing value? I don't think that question's been answered yet. We have 2.7 terabytes of productive data. Okay, that's data streaming through our productive systems here in the hospital as I sit here, which is a massive amount of data if you look at it from a perspective 5 or even 10 years ago, especially 10 years ago. And there are companies that are running much, much larger data sets. There's a couple of phenomena that happen. Maybe it's a little more unique to industries like healthcare, where research goes fishing. In other industries, it could be marketing. And because there's such large data sets, it's tantalizing. And they want to go in and see if there's something in that. So they literally start fishing with no hypothesis that they're trying to prove. It's they're looking for a hypothesis to then prove. So that's a little worrisome. But to close on the question that you asked, this the concept of big data, I think, is just reflective, saying that something's happening in the analytic and data aggregation realm.
Okay, so I assume John has joined us. Hello, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing well today. Thank you. Sorry, I'm a little late, but I'm here.
All right, no problem, because I know there's a tough life out there. You must be busy working 25 hours a day.
That's right. I wish there were two of me.
See, now that's what we call a scale. So while we cannot scale ourselves as human beings, but I'm sure we are trying to scale data here, and that's why we're talking about big data. So very quickly, we did talk about with Dale about the definition as he sees it, and then also what is so special about this that as big data as a new paradigm which we did not think of before, or that has not been seen as a huge need that we need to even address. But you know what? Since we are very close to the break, let's take this break, come back, and then start discussing this. And we'll love to have John share your input, please.
Okay, sounds good.
Stay tuned, listeners.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network. You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjay Gall.
Welcome back. So John, as we were discussing the fact that, you know, the big data or what we are calling as big data, we've always handled huge amount of data anyways. So, and people are saying that big data could be because we have some unstructured data coming in or things that we never used before or you plan to use before. So what's that urgency or what's that new need that we've just uncovered?
Well, in the Red Cross, we have an awful lot of data because we're dealing with the public across the United States, and we really have two lines of business, if you will, and that's the area of blood. We're 50% of the nation's blood supply, and so that means there are a tremendous amount of donors that every day give blood at a local blood drive or their local hospital or whatever. And so all of the data that has to do with those donors and keeping track of them and of course always seeking more donors because sometimes somebody may give for a while and then they have a health issue or whatever, so then you need new donors. So we use it really as a, as a customer database, if you will, but we have a tremendous amount of history, as you might imagine, and there's big data behind that.
So now with what we are looking at as whether I know in American Red Cross, you may not have so-called a competitive advantage situation because you're not truly competing, you're just giving back. But in other situations, as you might have seen, your counterparts in private industry or other agencies, where they have to figure out a way to do something better and or to show that, okay, whatever we did earlier, we are doing faster, better, cheaper, and thus, in a way, indirectly, a competitive advantage could be created. And in your case, Dale, there could be competitive advantage, period, where you could try to know better about your patients, about the doctors, about anyone who's going to have a touch point with you. So do you think this big data thing is truly going to give you or can give you that competitive advantage, or we are just kind of trying to make a case here?
Well, in the hospital environment in the U.S., it's a little different, where it's a revenue-generating industry generally, not exclusively, but generally. In Canada, we're more of a social program. The focus on data tends to be around three major factors: patient safety, patient quality, the quality of care, and then cost, of course. So the two big areas in the clinical world, if you push cost aside, that are looked at are related to patient outcomes. So if we increase a length of stay for a certain type of patient, does that lead to a better outcome for the patient, or is there a better outcome if we send them home earlier? So we have these huge departments, epidemiology being the largest, and then researchers that voraciously, you know, comb through data to try to make inferences that are statistically supportable, and then we would adapt our practices to influence those. The other big sources of data, as I mentioned earlier, are from our operational systems and technologies, like our biomedical devices. So for some devices, like a ventilator, it's quite critical that we have an alarm that responds to, you know, a movement out of a threshold, because it could mean that a person's life is at risk. So people react very quickly, or they monitor these things historically quite frequently. With the advent of, you know, wireless and other technologies, now this data is being moved across to storage locations, not necessarily being used. So that's sort of what's perpetuating data in the healthcare industry.
Now, when it comes to the so-called insights that we want to get from big data, so John, the question for you would be, is that what is it that incrementally insightful that you are going to get out of this rather huge investment?
Yeah, let me give you the second area where we use big data, and that's the Red Cross in the United States is also a very large training company for everything from babysitting classes, first aid, swimming lessons, heart, AED training for people in case people have heart attacks and so forth. So we have today about, and frankly in the scope of big data, this is a little bit small, but we have about 15 million records of people that have taken classes in regarding the classes I just mentioned. Well, if you think about it, there's, 300 million people in the United States, so roughly 15 million, only 15 million of them have taken some kind of a class that would help to improve their lives or to save somebody else's life. So we're using a big data application to get more customers, if you will, and by the way, many of these classes are free, so they're not exactly a customer scenario in terms of money, but it is in terms of our mission. We're trying to teach people how to do first aid. We're trying to teach young teenagers how to be better babysitters to avoid having an issue with a baby that they're looking after and so forth. So we want to use big data to figure out some of what our potential customers could be, how we can use the current customers to get to other people, and so forth. And I heard mentioned something about phishing, so we're doing some of that as well. And we're also using some social networking tools because we do have some people who, through the use of social networks, come to the Red Cross and say, you know, gee, I'm interested in helping out, or I'd like to take a class. How do I do that? So we're in the process of putting that data, those requests, into our big data pool, and then using that to begin to model how we can get at more, in quotes, customers across the United States that could take these kinds of classes and, of course, improve life for everybody.
Now, with that said, in your context, Dale, do you have something that you feel has allowed you, after you perhaps made the required investment, to better your profits or better your satisfaction for the patients and their relatives, et cetera? Anything which is very significant, a quantum leap in what you earlier did versus what you do now by leveraging the big data insights?
Yeah, I don't know if it'd be considered a quantum leap, but certainly the use of some of the social media has really helped. Things like we've had some contacts through Facebook. We use some data mining tools in the Facebook space. We use some data mining tools in terms of the hits on our website, and then turn that data into potential people who might be interested in these kinds of products or services. And then with our marketing department, develop trends and areas where we might advertise more, and sort of use that data then as a stepping stone to help the public with the things that we do offer.
Interesting. Now, in terms of so-called productivity, that's another thing that someone says, or perhaps not, the researchers are saying, and or people are saying there, that when you use big data, you could even use that to improve productivity. And it's kind of interesting how people are correlating handling more data or having some insight from that blob of data to see that what a person is doing every second of the day as if people were robots, and trying to improve productivity out of that. Perhaps that's the interpretation that's floating in the marketplace. But what's your thought on it? So, John, if I were to give you much more data that you had today with respect to what people are doing, are you going to treat them as an assembly line robots, or are you going to still treat them as humans?
Well, we're gonna treat them as humans, of course. And, you know, our products, if you will, the classes we teach and so forth, are very human. So, by definition, we have to do that. But the other thing we're doing, and along to follow in with your question, is we're also buying big data. We're buying information. As you might know, in the United States, many people are quite mobile. You know, one year they work in a factory in Illinois. Maybe 2 years from now they move to another factory in South Carolina, or they... we have a huge portion of the population that's headed for retirement, the so-called baby boomers. Perhaps they raised a family in the north. Now they're in the process of moving to somewhere in the south. And so we're using some of this purchased data to go into our database and then use those demographics as part of our tools to better offer our services by understanding how the movement of people occurs within the United States. I don't think that's necessarily, you know, a huge revelation, but it certainly has allowed us to be more reactive in terms of what's actually happened with the demographics in the United States.
Now, when it comes to any kind of gotchas, so when you go about using this big data approach, is there something that you need to do internally, Dale? So in your case, if you said, okay, I'm going to suddenly start adding more storage, perhaps, and that's the geek side of IT. But do you need to make any other change so that people know that now you're going to collect data that you never collected before?
Well, certainly there's an infrastructural aspect. There's storage, but then you need to sort of, you know, come out of the data center up towards the user through the networks and so on. So the stress on the networks increases because a lot of this data that's being collected is coming across a wired or wireless network infrastructure. That's reasonably easy. I think the the biggest change, and I'd be interested to see if John would have experienced this as well, is increasing data relevance by having primary pointers. Let me give you an example. So we're a hospital, and for the hundreds of years, hospitals have treated the sick. So our mandate has been to fix people, for lack of a better term. So we come in when people are sick or they have some kind of a disease state. What we're doing now is we're trying to associate large sets of data with patient populations and aggregate those. So an example would be chronic disease, and a further example would be diabetes. So diabetes is affecting a large percentage of the population in Canada and even more so in the U.S. What we're trying to do is push data out to patients, certainly, about how to proactively manage their health. And this is in an effort to keep them out of our hospital, not bring them in. And also push data out to our providers to proactively tell them of activities that they should undertake. Like a diabetic, for instance, annually should have a foot exam and an eye exam. Often they don't, because the providers leave it up to the patients to make a phone call and make an appointment. The patients are assuming that if there's something they need to do, the providers would poke them and say, you need a foot exam. So it falls between the cracks. What we're trying to do by associating large masses of data with certain populations and eventually down to individuals, and that enhances our ability to proactively push information out.
Yeah, did I lose you, Dale?
Well, I've been talking. Okay. Was I still there?
Yeah, you are there. I just lost you for a second.
Oh, no, I just had finished my thought.
All righty. So now, in case, John, when you look at any of these analysis that we try to do, and then you are going to ask people that now, or are you going to rather tell people that now we are going to be collecting information about whether what they are writing as an email, what they are tweeting over through their work network, or anything and everything for that matter will not be captured. So if you remember, there was a lot of hue and cry when there were privacy was being invaded. Or was seen as invaded when government said that we are going to be tapping into people's phone because we might have a terrorist threat or whatever. That's not exactly what we are doing here. However, if you're going to try to collect data, as much as data about anything and everything that happens within an organization and or anything that we do while we touch the external organizations, how are you going to manage the political and or the privacy-related concerns that people will raise?
Well, as you might imagine, we have to obviously have to be very careful with that. We don't want to alienate what could be a potential customer. But the data we're capturing, for instance, from social media isn't just out floating around. It's people who have contacted us by using a social media tool, and in Twitter or Facebook and so forth, and have asked a question. How can I get more involved? How can I get a babysitting class? Sometimes it's just somebody who says, the Red Cross helped my family and I wanted to thank you. So typically it's always somebody who has some kind of an association with us such that they wanted to contact us. So we're not arbitrarily just going out and hitting the public. We're only using, the contacts that we know have some interest in us. And of course, it gets interesting because you begin to see patterns. For instance, around Christmas, we get more hits like that because people have had a good experience or they want to thank us for some help we gave during the course of the year. Or when there's some kind of a disaster, for instance, the tornadoes we had in the middle of the country in the spring. After that, we had a lot of people inquiring as to how can I help, what can I do to be part of the Red Cross team, and so forth. So we're using the data where we know there's some interest and not just randomly seeking anybody across the country and trying to build our data that way, because it avoids the problem you're talking about where we might contact somebody who didn't want to be contacted.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back. And let's look at the false positives. So since you are handling so much data, or for that matter, trying to analyze so much data, do we think that we have the right analysis tools or analytics tools, and or the acumen which we have developed to look through all this and try to make deductions and inferences and based on that make business decisions? How about there is a false positive that could get introduced just because we are handling something that we have never handled before? Are we ready for the repercussions of a decision made based on some false analytics or some false deductions that are made? Please stay tuned. We'll ride back and explore.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back. So, Dale, let's look at the false positive or the risk of false positives that might get introduced when we are dealing with, first of all, the volume that we have not handled before, and secondly, the type of people and the talent that we might have in-house to handle that level of data. So, what are we living with?
Well, it's quite a complex issue that you're raising. Big data implies large stores of not information, actually data that hasn't been then, you know, distilled or crystallized into information even at that point. We use data, as most businesses do, in different ways. So we have our operations, our clinical services that we run, and we use data to manage decisions around what we do there. So if we have an outbreak, or we're, you know, have recurring outbreaks of one of the hospital super bugs like MRSA or C. difficile, it would be implied logically that you would do, 100% screening to make sure that you're not introducing this virus into the system. What we learned after we spent $1 million a year doing that for several years was that was not in fact the case, and we actually had better results if we used the randomized methodology to do that, because we were putting so much volume on the lab, the patient would be sometimes in our system and discharged before we understood that they had a superbug because of the volume that we were placing in our system. So there are some false positives that lead you to, you know, maybe not so wise decisions, but those are reasonably harmless. Where you get into a realm where you have to be much more careful, and I would assume this is the same for the American Red Cross and their supply chain management of their blood products and services. We have a research arm that that does clinical research. So we can change how patients, the surgical procedures or the interventions for patients based on inferences that are made by physicians or scientists. What I do to mitigate that is I make sure nothing moves unless it's been approved by a number of the research ethics board, the privacy commission, if that's appropriate. There's a scientific oversight committee, because I don't want to be the source. I don't want to be implied as the source for giving information that led to a bad clinical decision or outcome. But it is a bit of a wild west at the moment because there is so much rich information. And John, you referred that you do some phishing, so I guess you would also be sensitive to the fact that that can be a little bit of a dangerous game, right?
Yeah, and primarily the phishing is in the area of our training classes and so forth, so it isn't in the blood and healthcare space. But I will say that in the blood healthcare space, much like you talked about some of the controls there, that's actually a pharmaceutical business. So therefore, in the United States, it falls under the auspices of the FDA. And therefore, so any processes, any changes, to include changes to IT systems, all have to be approved by the FDA, and that's the control point. So typically in that regular day-to-day process, I wouldn't use any of these mining tools or sort of ad hoc things. That's all controlled IT work, much very traditional. The place where we use the marketing tools and so forth is in our training classes and so forth, where it isn't controlled as tightly because it doesn't have ramifications that it might in the blood business. So we're careful with that is the point.
But I think, you know, just to crystallize the question, from my perspective, the more data you have, the more risk you have of false positives. It's just, I mean, you could do it, you could say it's a statistical relationship, or you could just say it's a fact based on volume. But as our data sources have grown, we've seen more false positives, at least ones that we've caught and dealt with.
Yeah, I'd concur with that. You know, it's that's sort of true of anything you're doing in life. If you have more data in the sample, you're bound to have more issues. And you do get some. I was talking earlier about some trends that have to do with seasonality or when we have a disaster. And for instance, we have a lot of volunteers. So what that means is that when there's a disaster of some type, you get an increase in the volunteers. But frankly, sometimes the volume of volunteers isn't helpful. So essentially that's a bit of a false positive because people show up, oh gee, I want to help, but they're untrained, perhaps there's a security issue, perhaps they're disingenuous. You know, there's some other issues around that, and so you got to be careful with some of this. You're right, you have to be careful with some of this big data because you're liable to get, you don't want to draw a pattern or a picture that's a false positive, and we've had some of that.
Now, one is to just talk about the false positive portion. Another is to try to figure out that, yes, this is a challenge and we have to deal with it. We have jumped into it and we kind of know the risks and we are also not prepared for it. So what is being done so that you do not, you're not seen as IT leaders who are firing and then aiming?
Well, I guess from my perspective, as a CIO, at least in large organizations, the CIO has become not a technologist, but really a business leader at the table, having discussions in the domain of information and technology, but in a business context. So if you were to ask my boss, the CEO, he would say it's my job to sort of tame the beast that's being rendered in our systems. The way I do that is I have, in our case, clinical experts, physicians and pharmacists, nurses, others in my organization, and their job is to challenge, is there a need or a value add to a process if we introduce and expose this data? If no, then why are we storing it? Because the propensity is to store everything. But, and it's a little nerve-wracking, but especially in an industry where you're dealing with other people's information. Now, you know, to John's point, John's industry is heavily regulated by the FDA, so there's a container that's defined, so that it's somewhat more static. It's not that we're not regulated. We are heavily regulated in the hospital environment, but there's still some latitude in terms of interpreting what is relevant patient data. The short answer to the question is I believe it's my job to go and broker discussions to find out if there's a need and value from whatever perspective of the business in retaining data.
And I'd concur with that. As CIOs, we've become a little bit of the traffic cop. I find myself, Dale, much like you, where you're in a meeting and people are drawing some conclusion from a huge amount of data and they've done some marketing analysis. And I find myself many times saying, well, wait a minute, folks, what this is really telling you is XYZ. And by the way, you could have this other influential information in the middle here. Keep in mind that we had a flurry of activity around, we had a Christmas program that was on television that was sponsored by the Red Cross. And so all of a sudden we had many more tweets about the Red Cross. And of course the marketing people say, oh, look at all the renewed interest and everything. Well, yeah, but it was also driven by this one sort of advertising thing we did. So you got to keep in mind that it doesn't necessarily mean that the whole country is now all interested in the Red Cross. So I find myself like you, you know, sort of cautioning in our staff meetings about drawing too many conclusions too quickly from this trendy data, and sort of you got to back them down every once in a while from leaping to some conclusion that may not be exactly correct.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back and then start looking at what is it that we are supposed to do with respect to taming this beast. And we did talk about a couple of ways to do it, but then if it is data, whose responsibility is it? Just because it is, it kind of indirectly hints that it has got something to do with IT, should CIOs be just holding the bag? Should this become a problem which is also co-owned and co-sponsored by business? And is it expected to have the same fate what we saw with MDM, which is also where we were trying to boil the ocean? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile and connected. To compete, you want data center flexibility so you can adapt quickly to changing business needs while keeping information safe. Introducing Enterprise Cloud Compute Services, HP's solution for managing secure servers, storage, and networks, delivered as a service. Pay only for what you need. Create order out of chaos. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Start shaping your cloud at HP.com.
We live in an instant-on world, mobile, connected, and fluid. Competing in this world takes a special kind of workplace technology that adapts to change, that allows seamless and personalized interaction. Introducing Workplace 360, HP's full lifecycle desktop management solution, delivered as a service. User subscriptions allow you to gain financial control and flexibility. The instant-on enterprise is here. Are you ready? Visit HP.com for answers.
Thank you. Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So the situation here is that something new that has been taken on, and there are some questions that are out there. Plus, we are dealing with something that we've never handled before. We need resources, we need sponsorship, we need ownership, and not that if it's data related, that means it's IT related, that means it should be owned by the IT leader. Is that sentiment prevailing? Is that something that you are able to sell to your executive management, that I am not going to hold the bags myself as an individual and or my crew? Dale.
Well, certainly I try to. I don't want to be the sort of the go-to scapegoat for any issues related to the data. Although, that being said, you know, having taken on this job, I do have to, you know, bear some of the weight of responsibility of the data integrity and so on. But in terms of partnering within the organization, what I've tried to do, at least notionally, is to find data owners. So the easy ones are financial data is owned by the CFO, you know, HR data is owned by the senior VP HR. Where it gets a little less clear, if you stratify it, is when you get into the clinical domains. So are they medical department heads, or are they clinical VPs? But in any case, I try to push some responsibility in terms of the integrity and accuracy of the data when it's inbound and outbound back onto the businesses themselves. The thing that's a little difficult to manage is a lot of our data is personal health information for our patients. And while the hospital is the custodian, the end owner is the patient. Just like in your case, John, you would have donors where you have certain data on them. Some of that may be sensitive, and in the end, you're a custodian to their ownership. So in healthcare, we have a bit of a journey to take, like the financial services industry did, where if I were to ask either you, John or Sanjo, who owns your financial data, you would say you do, even though the bank is sort of the broker custodian of that data right now. There's not that similar sentiment in healthcare. If you were to ask most people who owns their health information, they would name the institution where they receive primary care.
So John, when you look at this, do you think you are expected to deliver ROI, or is this something that people say is going to deliver value, whether or not tangible or intangible?
The direct reports executive team doesn't expect me to really deliver the ROI. They expect me to provide resources to help each of the departments to deliver ROI, if you will. We don't exactly have ROI in the Red Cross because we're a nonprofit, but you know, our ROI is measured in quantities of people that we help, and you know, good press and things like that. And also, it's measured a bit in the amount of donor dollars that we receive because we've done a good job of helping people. But I have to watch my costs so that I don't exceed certain levels that we use to manage the Red Cross. But back on the point about who owns the data, within my organization, each of the departments very clearly know that they own the data, and particularly in our blood space, because that is protected data. In fact, frankly, we don't fool around with any of that donor information whatsoever, other than, you know, we may call people that have already given blood and ask them to donate again. but we don't use the same kinds of marketing tools and so forth in that space that we might with people who are volunteers or people who have taken a training class of some kind, because we want to be very respective of that data. And there's lots of laws in the United States about that personal health data as well, so we have to respect that. But the various departments are responsible for their data. They know that. That helps my job, of course. My job is to secure it, save it, help them work with it, and so forth. And we have a very good team that works back and forth that way. And in fact, I've been here headed for 3 years now, and I'll just tell you that they worked very hard to ensure that they hired me, that I was a fit, frankly, with the organization, because of the fact that they know that they have to work so close with the CIO. So very happy to be here, but they worked pretty hard at the interview process so that we would have a good executive team. So it's about good management of the company and not just the data.
So in 30 seconds each, Dale, we'll start with you. What are the top three things you would suggest to people who are just getting started with this new paradigm?
Well, I would first, put on a headline what business problem you're trying to solve by aggregating more data or going out, like John referred to, and buying data. It could be marketing needs. It could be getting into new markets and so on. So but that needs to be understood up front, so that you don't start aggregating data that doesn't lead you towards that goal. The second point would be around challenging data collection as it relates to your business processes themselves. So I used a number of examples earlier. John, you talked about identifying and understanding your populations you're educating in that business line. There's clear value, but there's I know in our system, I'll admit that there's a large proportion of data we're collecting that if I sort of wandered around the organization, people wouldn't put up their hand and say, I really need that. So there's a challenge in terms of managing that down. And the third element I would say, which was just discussed, is make sure that there's ownership, clear ownership, and co-ownership, I suppose, of the data in the business side.
John.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with all those, but particularly the first one where you got to be sure that you know what it is that you're trying to do, what's the business process and the problem you're trying to solve, and that's first and foremost here. A couple other thoughts and a little bit of technical side is I've discovered in the last year or so that there's an awful lot of services out there, so data warehousing in the cloud, if you will, has some real charm because you can expand it, contract it, buy data, add it in together, and not have to manage all of that yourself. So there's some applications where that might make a lot of sense. And then the last thing would be that we're working more and more all the time to mine data that occurs through the social media areas. Now, I may have a business here that lends itself more to that because of the nature of the Red Cross and so forth, but recently spent a couple of days on the West Coast working with some of the companies out there in terms of, where is social media going? How do we capture some of that data? How useful is it? What part of it do you discount because it's merely buzz? What part of it's really valid? So I think there's a whole area there of capturing potential data in a space that's very new.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, thank you so much, Dale and John, for sharing your thoughts on the big data. It looks like we can't really predict some moderate business value coming out from big data, and perhaps it will go to the next level when we have some clarity on what is the true ROI, what does it take for us to get the most out of it, and perhaps our tools and technology and the people and the talent is all aligned to get the most out of this new discovery in terms of what do we do with big data. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a nice talk. Thank you.
Please send us your thoughts to views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sunjal Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.
CIO Talk Radio is sponsored by HP Data Center Services, Cloud Computing Services, and Workplace 360 Services. Are you ready for an instant on